Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you have your tape recorders rolling tonight or this afternoon, depending upon which coast or where in between you are at. Or make sure that you have a thick pad of paper and that you take extensive notes, because I'm going to let you have it today with all four barrels. And I'm going to be shoveling information and references and document numbers and executive orders and laws and United States Code and everything else at you so fast that if you're not paying attention, you're going to miss it. And as usual, I advise you all, listen to everyone, read everything, believe absolutely nothing, not from me, not even from your own mother, unless you can prove it in your own research, in your own investigations, in your own right. That is the only way you will ever know if anything is really the truth. You see, we got in the situation that we're in by trusting people to do the right thing, because it can't happen in America. Boom. Ladies and gentlemen, recent polls tell us that the average American family, and I'm talking about each member, watches television an average of 7 hours each day. Now, if you take 7 hours of watching television, combine that with 7 hours or 8 hours of school and work, it doesn't leave much time in the day to even talk to each other, does it? The best thing that you can do for your family and for yourselves and for your children, if you're not able to control the amount of time and the subject matter that you are watching on the communist news networks, is to take a big hammer, give it to your smallest child, and tell him to fix the television set. And once you've done that, your family will be a lot safer than it ever was. For while you are watching the pablum that they shovel your way daily, nightly, all night, every night, this is what's really happening in the world, and this is what you will never be told or never learn on the communist news networks. Were you aware, ladies and gentlemen, that your favorite president, on June 16, 1983, under Executive Order 12-425, entitled International Criminal Police Organizations, Ronald Reagan signed this executive order, which literally gives international criminal police organizations immunity from all laws of the United States of America. Ladies and gentlemen, what you're going to hear tonight and tomorrow night is going to anger you, probably to the point of exploding. You're going to find that we've been betrayed, that the United States really does not exist except in your minds, and some of you reached that conclusion yesterday when I showed you what's really in the Constitution and compared it to what's really happening, and they do not agree at all. If the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, how can that happen? Unless, of course, it's already been subverted and thrown into the trash can. And I'm telling you right now, that is exactly what has happened. We have been betrayed. The Constitution, ladies and gentlemen, was scrapped many, many years ago. We are being propelled gradually, but faster and faster all the time, into a one-world, totalitarian, socialist, utopian government. By utopian, I mean that's what they want us to believe. It is not going to be utopian by any stretch of the word or the imagination. We have been in the midst of World War III for many years. It is being waged against not only the people of the United States, but the people of the world, in order to bring about this one-world totalitarian socialist utopian government. The symbol, ladies and gentlemen, of international socialism, in case you've wondered why I continually play the rose on this broadcast, is a red rose. And when they gave one solitary red rose to all of the people who attended the memorial service for the victims of the Oklahoma City bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah building, it was a mockery. for the building was blown up to further the interest of socialism by socialists to bring about the agenda of the disarmament of the American people. Bill Clinton has been photographed in the Oval Office holding up one red rose. So has Fidel Castro and Khrushchev and Gorbachev and Molotov. All of them. And I could go on and on and on and on. Lenin, etc. Under this executive order that Ronald Reagan signed, neither state nor federal law prohibits participation by the United States National Central Bureau of Interpol in a computerized information exchange system. And though federal disclosure laws, etc., must be complied with, the Bureau may, but need not, comply with state restrictions on the use of data or state requests with respect to disclosure of data. Do you understand the consequences of what I am telling you? I mean, do you really? Under Section 286, small e-13, approval of fund pledged to sell gold to provide resources for reserve account of Enhanced Structural Adjustment Facility Trust. If Federal Reserve notes are money, ladies and gentlemen, why is the United States paying its debts in gold? I quote, "The Secretary of the Treasury is authorized to instruct the United States Executive Director of the Fund to vote to approve the funds pledged to sell, if needed, up to 3 million ounces of the fund's gold to restore the resources of the reserve account of the Enhanced Structural Adjustment Facility Trust to a level that would be sufficient to meet obligations of the trust, payable to lenders which have made loans to the loan account of the trust that have been used for the purpose of financing programs to fund members previously in arrears to the fund," end quote. In other words, as always, we're bailing out with 3 million ounces of gold people who cannot pay their debts. Listen to this. Quote, "I, William J. Clinton, President of the United States of America, find that the proliferation of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons and of the means of delivering such weapons constitutes an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, and economy of the United States, and hereby declare a national emergency to deal with that threat. Executive Order 12868 of September 30th, 1993. End quote. You had better understand what I'm telling you, and you had better understand what that executive order just said in the context of the rest of this program, ladies and gentlemen, for it is important in your personal daily life. Executive Order 12359 of April 22, 1982, Section 1, I quote, "The multinational force and observers in which the United States participates, pursuant to Section 138 of Public Law 97-51 and Public Law 97-132, is hereby designated as a public international organization entitled to enjoy the privileges, exemptions, and immunities conferred by the International Organization's Immunities Acts," end quote. You see, you thought I was fooling. Also, ladies and gentlemen, the United States Treasury Department was established under the Treaty of Bretton Woods, wherein it specifically states that the Treasury Department comes under the International Monetary Fund and international organization under the United Nations, and the Secretary of the Treasury, which up until not too long ago was Lloyd Benson, cannot be paid by the United States of America, but instead receives his remuneration from the International Monetary Fund. He is an agent of a foreign power. That makes the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms an international police organization exempt from the laws of the United States of America, and that explains what has been happening in recent months and years and why no one is ever punished for what they have done. They have immunity. It also explains how the president is being held hostage in the White House by a security force called the Secret Service, which owes its allegiance to the United Nations and not the United States of America. They will tell you that the Secret Service is an agency under the Department of the Treasury. Yet if you look in the United States Code under the organization of the Department of the Treasury, you will find that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Internal Revenue Service, and the Secret Service are not listed as agencies of the Department of the Treasury of the United States of America, or as any agency of any department of any branch of government of the United States of America. But according to law, if they are, they must appear under the organization table in the United States Code as such agents. I should say agencies, but they are not, you see. They do not owe any allegiance to the United States of America because they are agencies of the United Nations. And that is a fact. Multinational force, Public Law 97-132, Section 23, privileges and immunities of the multinational force organization. The multinational force organization shall enjoy the status, privileges, and immunities accorded in Article 2 of the Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of the United Nations, hereinafter known as the Convention. Still quoting, the provisions of Article 2 of the Convention shall also apply to the property, funds, and assets of participating states used in the receiving state in connection with the activities of the MFO. Such participating states may not require immovable property in the receiving state without agreement of the government of the receiving state. The government of the receiving state recognizes that the right of the MFO to import, free of duty, equipment for the MFO and provisions, supplies, and other goods for the exclusive use of members of the MFO includes the right of the MFO to establish, maintain, and operate at headquarters, camps, and posts, service institutes providing amenities for the members of the MFO, end quote. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the equipment coming into the United States from foreign nations, Soviet bloc and East bloc military equipment, is equipment belonging to the MFO of the United Nations. Under locally recruited personnel, quote, 37, the MFO may recruit locally such personnel as required. The authorities of the receiving state will, upon the request of the Director General, assist the MFO in the recruitment of such personnel. Sympathetic consideration will be given by the Director General in the recruitment of local personnel to requests or observations of authorities of the receiving state in order to avoid any adverse effect on the local economy. The terms and conditions of employment for locally recruited personnel shall be prescribed by the Director General and shall generally, to the extent practicable, be no less favorable than the practice prevailing in the receiving state, end quote. And many of you think that Ronald Reagan was your friend. Boy, did he pull one over on you. And on and on and on. Public Law 92-132, ladies and gentlemen. Now here we have Executive Order 11490. Under Part 3, Department of the Treasury, it states specifically that, quote, the Secretary of the Treasury shall develop policies, plans, and procedures for the performance of emergency functions, not normal functions, emergency functions, with respect to the following. And it goes through an awful lot of things that would just frost you, ladies and gentlemen, but number 12, quote, maintenance of the central government accounting and financial reporting system, administration of customs laws, tax laws, and laws on control of alcohol, alcoholic beverages, tobacco, and firearms, suppression of counterfeiting and forgery of government security stamps, coins, and currency, protection of the president and the vice president and other designated persons, etc., etc., etc. From a hardbound book, a thick book entitled Review of United Nations Charter, Collection of Documents, Senate Document 87, 83rd Congress, Second Session, on page 461, paragraph 99. Disclosure and Verification of Armed Forces and Armaments. United States Proposal in the Disarmament Commission, April 5th, 1952. That's 1952, folks. You see, this didn't just happen yesterday. Quote, the General Assembly resolution calling for regulation, limitation, and balanced reduction of all armed forces and armaments directs that the Commission be guided by a number of principles, including the following. Operative paragraph 3, small a. In a system of guaranteed disarmament, there must be progressive disclosure and verification on a continuing basis of all armed forces, including paramilitary, security, and police forces, and all armaments, including atomic. Now, do you understand what he just said there? They're talking about continued reporting and verification on all armed forces, including paramilitary, which is the militia, security personnel, which means the guy that's standing down at the bank, guarding the bank, and police forces, which means sheriff and police departments, and all other armaments, including atomic. It goes on, quote, such verification must be based on effective international inspection to ensure the adequacy and accuracy of the information disclosed. This inspection to be carried out in accordance with the decision of the international control organ to be established. It's in effect, ladies and gentlemen. We have Russian observers on United States soil supervising the disarmament of the United States of America as of this moment. And they've been here for a long, long time. Remember, when you heard that according to a newspaper article in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, United States Atomic Submarine Commanding Officers were ordered by the president to turn in their launch keys, and we read that article on an episode of The Hour of the Time. Listen to this. On page 462, under small a, extent of disclosure and verification, paragraph 2, quote, the disclosure must cover all armed forces of every kind, including paramilitary, security, and police forces, and all armaments, including atomic. The verification of armed forces and armaments must likewise cover all armed forces of every kind, including paramilitary, security, and police forces, and all armaments, including atomic. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's go to a document entitled Disarmament, Two Approaches, A Comparison, United States and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, Disarmament Proposals. Now, understand what I'm telling you. This is a joint proposal between the United States and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The breakup of the Soviet Union was not an accident. It is a deceit. Mikhail Gorbachev admits that in his book Perestroika. It has also been admitted by many other high-level Soviet bureaucrats and generals. And it is thoroughly documented and outlined in a book entitled New Lies for Old. This was published by the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency in November of 1961, ladies and gentlemen. That's November of 1961, and this outlines the entire plan to disarm the world, including the United States of America and its people. Quote, disarmament goals, a free world under the rule of law with procedures for the peaceful settlement of disputes. The United States, a free, secure, and peaceful world of independent states adhering to common standards of justice and international conduct and subjecting the use of force to the rule of law, a world where adjustments to change takes place in accordance with the principles of the United Nations and under the USSR, no provision. After general and complete disarmament has been achieved, measures to be put into effect for preserving peace and security in accordance with the United Nations Charter. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics agreed only to agree once disarmament has occurred, and that disarmament is the disarmament of the United States of America and the Western powers. The Soviet Union did not agree to disarm, did not disarm, are not disarming now, and instead are continuing to build up their military forces because if all else fails, and if they are not able to disarm the American people, ladies and gentlemen, they will use the military might of what we used to know as the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics to bring the United States of America into line. We are disarming. They are not. Under general and complete disarmament under the United States, a world where there shall be a permanent state of general and complete disarmament under effective international control. Under the heading the USSR, quote, general and complete disarmament under strict and effective international controls. Note, in elaborating on this goal, the Soviets reject control of agreed levels of armaments at any stage, except after general and complete disarmament has been obtained, which means everyone else disarmed except for them. Under use of resources, quote, a world where the resources of nations shall be devoted to man's material, cultural, and spiritual advance. That's the United States goal. Under the USSR, quote, part of funds released from expenditure on armaments is to be used for economic assistance to underdeveloped countries, end quote. I bet you're wondering what is happening. Well, this explains an awful lot of it, ladies and gentlemen. And we will continue and elaborate on this during the rest of this broadcast and also tomorrow. You see, oh boy, they've been after us for a long, long time. You need to find your guts. I mean it. You need to find your guts. Stop sitting back and say it can't happen to me. It's already happened, ladies and gentlemen. You just don't know about it. You haven't seen the results of all of this yet, but I can assure you, you will. And when it does, it's going to be like a Mack truck hitting you at 80 miles an hour in the middle of the freeway. But by then, it'll be too late. That's why I'm doing this. You need to find your guts and get ready to fight, if you understand what I mean. If you don't, you'd better hide in the closet, because the blood is going to run in the streets of America, and it's not far off, ladies and gentlemen, and it's not because we're going to start a war or we want to kill anybody. We don't. Nobody in this country or any other country wants to kill anybody, wants to hurt anybody. I fought in Vietnam, and when I came back, I swore I would never kill another living thing as long as I lived. And I'm very, very upset that they're going to force me to do it, to protect the freedom and the future of my country and of my children and my family and my community. You see, whether we want to or not, they're going to force us to, unless we agree to be slaves, which most American people are not going to do ever. That's as foreign to them as living on Mars. So in order to force us to disarm, confiscate our firearms, take away our liberties and freedoms, and subject us to this new world order, they're going to have to fire the first shot. And when they do, there will be civil war in the United States of America. I know nobody wants to hear that, but you've got to hear it, because that's what's coming. And most of you already know that in your gut already. You're just afraid to say it, talk about it, or do anything to prepare for it. Because you think, if you don't, that it'll never happen. And I'm telling you right now, you're fooling yourself. There's nothing in the world that's going to prevent it from happening, because the socialists are not going to back off. They're not going to stop. And all of this is so ingrained in the law and in the treaties and in the documentation and in the resolutions and conventions of the United Nations that to unravel it would be like going to an octopus fight where you can't tell which tentacle belongs to which octopus, and there's 400 octopuses in the ring fighting. Just remember this. Whoever fires the first shot loses the war. We must never do that. We can do nothing, nothing. They must do it first, and they will. They're going to have to. When they tell us to turn in our weapons and we tell them, no, we're not going to do it. In the United States statutes at large, containing the laws and concurrent resolutions enacted during the first session of the 87th Congress of the United States of America, treason, 1961, and reorganization plans, amendment to the Constitution and proclamations. Treason. It's not part of this title. That's my interjection. Volume 75 in one part. Now, if I'm going too fast, ladies and gentlemen, to write this down, order the tape. If you'd like to get a complete tape list of all the broadcasts of the Hour of the Time, send us $1 in a self-address stamped number 10 size envelope, and I'll give you the address later. Volume 75 in one part, United States Government Printing Office, Washington, 1961. Public Law 87-297, September 26, 1961, to establish a United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. Quote, being an be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, Title 1, short title, Purpose and Definitions, Section 1. This act may be cited as the Arms Control and Disarmament Act. It lays it all out, ladies and gentlemen, establishes the agency that is to supervise the disarmament of the United States, overseen and inspected by appointed officers of the Soviet Union. Quote, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Organization and Functions, end quote. And ladies and gentlemen, this is dated October 17, 1961. Disarmament Document Series, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, resolution adopted by an 87-11 vote in the United Nations General Assembly regarding Soviet 50-megaton bomb. Number 1632, 16-1043, preliminary meeting, October 27, 1961. The General Assembly, seized with the question of halting nuclear weapons tests, solemnly appeals to the government of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics to refrain from carrying out its intention to explode in the atmosphere a 50-megaton bomb before the end of this month. End quote. That was the scare tactic. The result was a White House statement of October 30, 1961, calling for world disarmament by the President of the United States. He said, quote, we have no wish ever to use this military power. We are ready now, as ever, to sign the test ban treaty proposed at Geneva. We are ready now, as ever, to negotiate a treaty for general and complete disarmament, end quote. You see, they've been conducting this in the open, in the documentation, but behind closed doors to the public, because the public never reads the documentation. Disarmament Document Series, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, report to the United Nations Disarmament Commission on the 18 Nation Disarmament Committee's deliberations from the beginning of the conference, March 14, 1962 to June 1, 1962, end quote. The co-chairman of the conference of the 18 Nation Committee on Disarmament, at the request of that conference, transmit herewith to the United Nations Disarmament Commission, pursuant to General Assembly Resolution 1722-16, the following interim progress report on the conference deliberations for the period March 14, 1962 to June 1, 1962. It outlines the participants. It outlines the agreements. It outlines the preliminary deliberations. It tells, quote, the deliberations and the decisions for the Committee of the Whole, the informal meeting reports, the subcommittee on a treaty for the discontinuance of nuclear weapons tests and the disarmament of the nations of the world. And then there are conference documents listed. Then, Disarmament Document Series, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, text of presidential statement after. And after, quote, after signing into law the bill, Public Law 87-297, 87th Congress, establishing a United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, September 26, 1961, with the signing of H.R. 9118, there is created the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. This act symbolizes the important the United States places on arms control and disarmament in its foreign policy. The creation, for the first time, by an act of Congress, of a special organization to deal with arms control and disarmament matters emphasizes the high priority that attaches to our efforts in this direction, end quote. Treason. Plain and simple, it's treason. Quote, our ultimate goal, as the act points out, is a free world, is a world free from war. It doesn't say free world. It says a world free from war and free from the dangers and burdens of armaments in which the use of force is subordinated to the rule of law, in which international adjustments to a changed world are achieved peacefully. It is a complex and difficult task to reconcile through negotiating the many security interests of all nations to achieve disarmament, but the existence of this agency will provide new and better tools for this effort. I am pleased by the bipartisan support this bill enjoyed in the Congress. The leaders of both political parties have gave encouragement and assistance. The new agency brings renewed hope for agreement and progress in the critical battle for the survival of mankind. Translate, New World Totalitarian Socialist Utopian Government. And the next one, disarmament, two approaches, a comparison, United States and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics disarmament proposals. United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, dated November 1961. Ladies and gentlemen, quote, the United States calls on all states to make a continuous, uninterrupted effort to achieve a total program for general and complete disarmament, end quote. Do you understand? Now do you know why they keep putting into Congress all of these bills to make you register your guns, take away certain types of firearms from you, disarm the American people, and they won't stop until they have every firearm in this country, or until you draw the line and say no more, and then they will send the troops against us, and then the war will start. And it will happen. Under the USSR, Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, quote, although it has put forward certain proposals, apart from its disarmament plan, to ease international tensions and create a favorable climate for disarmament, the USSR takes the position, insofar as disarmament measures are concerned, that there must be full agreement on all aspects of general and complete disarmament before implementing a single measure, end quote. We are disarming, they are not. And it goes on into the goals that I've already communicated to you. Disarmament, the continuing search by William C. Foster, Director, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. Disarmament, the continuing search. Perhaps as you reflect on the news these days, you feel it is not comfortable to be an inhabitant of this planet. But of course, except for brief periods in history, it never has been comfortable for great numbers of people. Annihilation by club, arrow, spear, sword, bullet, or what have you, has been a constant threat at one place or another on this relatively small globe. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the United States government and the government of the United Kingdom at the end of World War II that promoted and continues to promote the Holocaust by the Germans in order to instill in the consciousness of the people of the world that disarmament must take place. Whether or not the Holocaust occurred is not the question, and you'd better understand that right now. Of course, to those Jewish people, and gypsies, and Poles, and Negroes, and Christians who were in the concentration camps, and who suffered, and who lost family members, and many, many others, the Holocaust is as real in their minds whether or not it occurred, and so stay off their back about it. Leave them alone. You see, it's not about them. These people are being used like we are being used. It is about world government. These people are being used to promote it, just as you are being used every day of your life. In the blueprint for the peace race, which is the outline of basic provisions of a treaty on general and complete disarmament in a peaceful world, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, quote, not to an arms race, but to a peace race, to advance together step by step, stage by stage, and until general and complete disarmament has been achieved, end quote. President John F. Kennedy, September 25th, 1961. This is from the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Publication 4, General Series 3, released May 1962. This, ladies and gentlemen, outlines the disarmament of all nations of the world and the combining of the military forces of the United States and Russia under the United Nations as a world police force. Our military forces, right now, today, are already fulfilling that function, and we have already began the initial experimentation in uniting our forces with foreign forces and with forces of the old Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, now known as the East Bloc countries, under foreign commanders as peacekeeping forces for the one world government, the United Nations. Ladies and gentlemen, what you just heard is the Internationale. That is the anthem of international Marxist socialism. That's the anthem of the International Communist Party. And if you listen to those words very carefully, I'm going to play it one more time. Listen to it. Listen to it very carefully. You must understand what is happening to you. You must understand that the people who belong to these philosophies owe no allegiance to anyone, or to any country, or to any oath, or to any office. Only to the agenda of one world government, period. Listen to the words.
Arise, ye starveling from your slumbers. Arise, ye criminals of want. For reason in revolt shall thunder, and at last in the age of ten. Now away with all superstition. Serve our message. Arise, arise. We'll change forth with the old conditions and burn the dust to win the prize. Then comrades, come rally, and the last fight let us face. The International unites the human race. Then comrades, come rally, and the last fight let us face. The International unites the human race.
Now, I believe I told you, ladies and gentlemen, that the blueprint for the peace race, the outline of basic provisions of a treaty on general and complete disarmament in the peaceful world, was the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency in a document, and that's not true. It is a State Department document, 7277. State Department document, 7277, entitled Blueprint for the Peace Race. Outline of basic provisions of a treaty on general and complete disarmament in a peaceful world. Not to an arms race, but to a peace race, to advance together step by step, stage by stage, until general and complete disarmament has been achieved. You can also get the same material from the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Publication 4, General Series 3, released May 1962. This, ladies and gentlemen, outlines the disarmament of all nations of the world and the combining of the military forces of the United States and Russia under the United Nations as a world police force. There will be no constitution. There will be no individual creator-endowed rights guaranteed by any constitution. There will be a socialist, totalitarian world government. It outlines three stages under which this is going to take place. And under stage two, it calls for the reduction of the armed forces of the United States military forces, all branches, to just over 2 million active duty soldiers, sailors, and Marines, and airmen. We are now in stage three. They are preparing to disarm the people. They are, listen to me carefully. You'd better listen to me. If you never listened to anyone in your whole life, you better listen to me now. They are preparing now in stage three. They are getting ready to disarm the people of the United States of America. Yesterday, the 21st of January, 1997, we phoned Washington, the Pentagon, the Department of the Navy, the Marine Corps. We phoned the Air Force and the Army. According to the Office of Public Affairs for the Pentagon, the total number of active duty personnel in all branches of the military right now is 1,466,986. And that was current as of October the 31st, 1996. We were told that the military does have plans to continue downsizing our active duty personnel, but that they did not have a target date or target figure for all branches combined. We were informed that each branch of the services has its own downsizing plan and target figures and dates. The Army at this time is not actively downsizing. We were told that they would like to keep their numbers at current levels. They also said they did not have a target reduction number or date. For January 1997, the approximate number of active duty personnel was 495,000. The Navy has been reducing active duty personnel since 1989. Their congressional limit is 395,000 by the end of fiscal year 1999. At this time, the current number of active duty personnel in the United States Navy is 407,000, and they expect to be at 401,000 by the end of fiscal year 1997. Note, the Navy is the only service to talk of congressional limits, which tells us that there may be congressional limits on the others, and they're not telling us what they are. Which means the next step is we will go and begin the research in the congressional record and dig it out ourselves. The Marines had completed their force reduction as of fiscal year 1994. The current number of active duty personnel in the United States Marine Corps is 174,000, and this is what they're trying to keep it at. The Air Force has been downsizing since fiscal year 1986. The target number for active duty personnel, including Air Force Academy graduates, is 380,425, which is to be reached by the end of fiscal year 2001. The current number of active duty personnel in the Air Force as of March 31st, 1996, is approximately 393,000. This figure includes approximately 4,000 Air Force Academy students. During the force reduction or downdraw, as the Air Force refers to it, the officer corps will be reduced by 32%, and the enlisted personnel will be reduced by 39%. The Coast Guard has been streamlining since 1994. Their goal was 12% of their active duty personnel, which equated to about 4,000. At this time, the active duty personnel number 34,992. They expect to be completed by the end of fiscal year 98. We were told that this is the smallest the Coast Guard has been since 1963. Side note, they were under the Treasury Department until 1967, at which time they were put under the then newly formed Department of Transportation. The Army and Marine Corps were the most helpful with information readily available. It took several calls and a lot of pulling teeth to get the Navy, Air Force, and Coast Guard to get the information requested and give it to us. We are persistent, and so we got it. Now, for those of you who don't know what's happening, all of our missile silos now are empty. They are empty, 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 empty. All of our Minuteman missiles have been destroyed. They are gone forever. Our B-52 strategic bomber fleet is being hacked into three pieces, each individual bomber, by a huge crane-wielded guillotine in the desert of Arizona. And every day, it must be done in the open, for the Soviet Union flies overhead with reconnaissance planes and takes photographs to make sure that we are destroying the exact number of bombers that we are required to destroy every day, every week, every month, every year. There are Soviet officers and political observers in this country right now, every single day, supervising the disarmament and downsizing of the military forces of the United States of America, while no such disarmament is taking place in what we used to know as the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, despite the spate of propaganda that is being shoveled at you like so much pablum to a baby by the communist news networks with the ilk of Peter Jennings, who's not even a United States citizen. Why would you listen to him? Dan Rather. Who, amongst all of the other things he's trying to hide, is his bald head. And on and on and on and on. Ted Turncoat and CNN is not functioning on behalf of the American people, and you should have known that when he married Hanoi Jane Fonda, who has always been and is still is a rabid communist. We are now in stage three, ladies and gentlemen. In stage three, the civilian populations of the United States and the other countries of the world who still have weapons will be disarmed. That's why the World Trade Center was blown up. That's why the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City was blown up. That's why the guy in Scotland, after he had been subjected to mind control experimentations, opened up on a schoolyard of children. That's why it happened in Australia. That's why it happened in a schoolyard in Stockton. And I wrote in my book years ago, many years ago, that all of these things would take place. How did I know? Not because I had anything to do with it, folks. I know simply because I've studied the history of socialism. They never change. They never change. They are as predictable as the sun. The problem with most of you is you never read history. Most of you, in fact, don't read at all anymore. Isn't that the truth? It's easier just to watch television, isn't it? The sum total of all of the wisdom and the knowledge of the human race is in books. None of it. Not one single iota of it is on television or on videotape or at the movie theater. You'd better understand that. That's why it is one of the biggest travesties that has ever happened to this country that we are turning graduates out of high school who cannot even read their own diploma. My daughter could read when she was 3. She's 6 years old now and just finished the adult leather-bound volume of Aesop's Fables. And she read the whole book in about 4 hours. I'm not bragging about my daughter, folks. She's just a little girl. What I'm telling you is, she has had a lot of attention and we've taught her to read, and you can do the same with your children and with yourselves. For they all have the same brains, the same potential. What they don't have is somebody that expects it of them and will help them reach the goals that they must reach in order to be responsible, knowledgeable, and proper citizens. Stage 3. We're in it. Very soon, they will begin to disarm the American people and the rest of the people in the world. The only armament that will be left in each country will be that armament which is sufficient to equip the police force necessary to maintain internal order. Don't believe it? Get it. State Department Publication 7277. Read it. Understand it. And stop whining and crying. Join a militia. If you can't find a militia to join, form one of your own. And get ready to fight for your freedoms, ladies and gentlemen, or get in the closet and hide until they come and put the chains on you, because democracy is a code word for socialism, and democracy is coming to the USA. Disarmament. When you hear that word, you think automatically of disarming Russia. Russia's not disarming. Ladies and gentlemen, we are. We did not win the Cold War as you thought. The fall of the Soviet Union was a deception to disarm the West, and the Soviets have made no secret of it. It is in all their writings. It is in their speeches. It is everywhere.
In a room for my baby, with
You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
She has decided to boycott the event.